friends. It's your old pal Ariel Helwani on this Wednesday, August 14th, 2019. Hope you're doing well. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters right here on ESPN. All platforms, ESPN. And I have to admit, I just finished taping Ariel and the Bad Guy. I am very excited. I am very excited about UFC 241. It feels like, at least for me, it has been a while since I have felt this kind of excitement, this kind of anticipation before a big card. And I know sometimes we fall into the trap of saying this is the best card of the year, this is the most loaded card of the year, it's absolutely stacked, but I think I'm pretty confident in saying it's the best card of the year because you have three amazing fights at the very top with big names. Of course, you know them. Daniel Cormier, Stipe Miocic 2, Nate Diaz, Anthony Pettis, Yoel Romero, Paulo Costa, but then you have a slew of rising stars, up-and-comers, future contenders sprinkled throughout the card. Names like Manny Bermudez, names like Ian Heinisch, Sadiq Youssef, Corey Sandhagen, Devontae Smith. I really like all the there's an interesting hook to every fight on this card. I like it very much, so I'm looking forward to that. And we're going to be focusing a lot of our attention on this particular episode on all things 241. We'll stray here and there, but for the most part, it's going to be very heavy on 241. And we have three very interesting and different perspectives on the top two fights on the card. Later in the program, we're going to be joined by Brian Vega. I know Brian Vega may not be a very recognizable name to all of you, but trust me, very interesting guy. You may know him on social media as at I Am The Bay. He is Daniel Cormier's personal photographer, and he's become a sort of unofficial American Kickboxing Academy photographer, and he has great insight into what Cormier is going through leading up to this fight. And just being the personal photographer for someone of that stature, I think, is very interesting. So we'll talk to Brian about Daniel Cormier and working as the AKA photographer a little later on in the program. We'll also talk to Mark Raimondi of ESPN, who earlier today published a great piece about his 24 hours with Stipe Miocic at the Firehouse in Cleveland, or just outside of Cleveland, that he works at. It's a very interesting story. I guess, unfortunately for Mark, no real big things happened, but maybe that's a good thing. He didn't get to go out, you know, and see Stipe in the field, so to speak, but that's just the way it goes sometimes. Sometimes you don't get a call. Sometimes you don't have to go out. But it did produce a really fun piece and interesting insight into who Stipe is, part-time fighter, soon to be full-time firefighter, of course, a father as well. So I am looking forward to talking to Mark about that. But first, let us go to, you know what? I don't know if we're in Las Vegas or Anaheim here with Brett, so let me ask him right off the top. Let's go to ESPN's Brett Okamoto, who is first up on the program. Are you in Anaheim yet, or are you still in Las Vegas, Brett?
Made it to Anaheim last night, Ariel.
Okay, so safe and sound in Anaheim. I guess you can't really tell, you know, what kind of buzz there is just here. We're about to start the open workouts and all that stuff, but it's a little early in the week, correct?
As far as here in California, yeah. I mean, I got in kind of late last night. I came straight to the hotel, which, by the way, this hotel, they love to play loud music right outside in the in the little area there outside, so you have that to look forward to if you're staying at the Marriott, which you probably are.
All right, I am looking forward to that. So I can't wait. I would imagine you share the excitement that I have for this card. You agree with me that this is thus far the most interesting, best card of 2019?
Yeah, I do. And I was listening to you early on, and we do get in the habit of saying that. Although, you know, I don't think you and I have said that too much this year. I mean, it's. You know, every card has something to look for, and every card has different storylines for sure. But I was thinking of, you know, some of the title fights that I've looked forward to the most this year, or just the main cards in general, or, you know, whether a card is deep or not. And I got to say that this one, in terms of, you know, the top fights on the card, I mean, the only one that really rivals this one for me would be Atlanta, you know, when Max was fighting Dustin and Kelvin was fighting Izzy. I mean, as far as... I mean, don't get me wrong, there's been some other amazing, amazing main event and co-main events, but as far as just if you're looking at the top two and the quality of the top two fights, and in this case, you know, the three fights that we have here, I would say it's a pretty solid lineup there at the top.
You know why I give this the nod over, say, Atlanta, and I agree those top two fights were amazing on paper. I think the rest of the card was a little thin compared to this one. Didn't have the prospects that this one does. What I love about this card is that everything makes sense. Everything has a reason. There's a build-up. Like, Poirier Holloway just kind of came out of nowhere, and it was for the interim lightweight title. It was just sort of weird, and also interim middleweight title, just sort of weird. Here we have a fight that makes sense. Stipe did deserve a rematch. It's a year in the making. Nate and Anthony is like 5 years in the making, and we want to see Nate back. Romero Costa is almost a year in the making as well. So like the top fights feel like they make sense. We've built to something. There's a purpose here. And I love cards like that. And sometimes in this day and age with so many cards, it feels like a lot of the fights don't make sense. Like they're just trying to fill up the card, and they produce great fights like the Atlanta card did, but it doesn't actually, you know, it doesn't actually make sense when you take a step back and think like, okay, were we building to this a few months ago? And that's why I feel like this one is that much more special than anything we've seen thus far.
Right. And there's you and I, I'm sure we'll be talking about this after the event, is that there's going to be so much to talk about after this event too.
Yeah.
You know, what happens with between Anthony and Nate, and where does that go? You know, I know Masvidal is kind of lurking out there. You know, Nate has mentioned his name as a fight that he might be interested in. It seems like Pettis has been targeting, you know, McGregor, and you never really know when Conor is ever going to come back. But I mean, if Anthony goes out and does something spectacular, I think he'll definitely have Conor's attention. You know, you have Cormier wondering if he's going to retire, or, you know, of course, the big John Jones trilogy fight that you talked to him about a lot this week. Stipe, he's just, you know, man on a mission. He's been stewing over this for a year, and what does he do after this? You know, I think that's also a really fascinating question. So. And the middleweight fight, of course, you know, those two guys are right there in terms of the title shot. So it does all, it has been building up to these fights, and there's so much at stake in each fight. You know, you can pick out different, you know, like honestly super fights for these guys after this potentially. So,
right.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to talk about with this card both before and after.
So you sat down recently with Nate Diaz, and anytime you're trying to get a Nate Diaz interview or get him to sit down, there's always a story behind the story. Would you feel comfortable telling us about the story to get Nate Diaz to sit down with you?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I've you know, you're always kind of working on a Nate Diaz interview, right? I mean, I think you're the same way. I mean, you want to talk to the guy, and you're always, you know, looking for opportunities to talk to him, but he's extremely selective. You know, I don't think he likes to do interviews, for one. And two, he's just very protective over his message and when the timing is right, and he doesn't want to say things just to say them, you know? So, I mean, it's not like I just called up, you know, Nate and his team one random week and they said, sure, come on out. You know, this was, you know, a lot of prep work, a lot of, you know, conversations, a lot of, you know, hey, when is this happening? Because, you know, then on our end, you know, we have to orchestrate a crew to shoot it, and, you know, producer to be in the field. And it's a lot goes into it. And, so we had gone through that process, and we had decided we were going to do it. I believe it was a Tuesday afternoon. Nate was in Los Angeles, in part to train with Chrome Gracie, who trains down there, but also just because I think he likes the area. He liked staying down in Venice Beach. This wasn't the first time that he'd gone out and gotten an Airbnb right on off of Venice Beach, just a couple blocks away. And what we had in mind is that, you know, hey, if you like this area so much, it makes you comfortable. You know, you'll be loose in it. You'll enjoy yourself. You know, let's walk the boardwalk. It'll be kind of a logistical challenge because I'm sure people will be running up to you and this and that. But you know, we'll do it if that's what you want to do, and that's the area you want to do it. We'll go down the boardwalk. We'll hang out at a coffee shop, the whole nine yards. You know, we had a whole plan. And I drove out from Vegas, and we got there. And the time that the interview was supposed to start was at 2 p.m. I actually saw Nate almost kind of randomly. I was walking around the area in which we were going to meet up. I saw him. I said, "What's up to him?" You know, he was eating a little bit of food. His friends were around him. And I was like, okay, well, are you about ready to head over there and start this thing? You know, and it was like, no, he wasn't really quite ready. And then he wanted to go on a run, which, you know, whatever. I was there for the day. I was there for Nate. You know, I'm on his time. So I know the story's kind of already getting long. So I'll
no,
jump
I
to
actually
the,
I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it.
I'll jump to the crux of it here. He went on a run. He came back. He showered. We were going to get going. It had gone from 2 to 3:30 to then 4:45, and then we're leaving his Airbnb because I was actually at his Airbnb waiting for him to get back from the run. So I thought this is great. You know, I'm here. I'm at his Airbnb. I know he's not going to just disappear on me because his stuff is here. You know, I'm not going to get ditched. And then he came back and we literally we got in cars to go over to the hotel to meet the camera crew. And my car went right, and Nate's car went left, and he decided that he wanted to go to the gym first. And we were not invited to the gym because he was sparring that day. He didn't want us to be around. He didn't want us to watch it. He didn't want us to film it. So I ended up waiting until 2 in the morning, and we got Nate at 2 in the morning in the living room of his Airbnb. No boardwalk, no coffee shop. But anybody who watched the interview knows that it still turned out all right. But that's the process of trying to interview Nate Diaz.
Wow. But in the end, you got it. So it's hard to be, I mean, like, you know that it's going to be somewhat of a journey to get it. But in the end, you got it. So no harm, no foul, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, I'm happy to do it. It's just, even when I anticipated it going, you know, there's no way we're going to start on time. You never anticipate it going 12 hours and then all of a sudden you're in the middle of the night, you know, but I guess you should. Anything's on the table with Nate.
What was your biggest takeaway from the interview? I mean, there's a lot of topics that you guys discussed. You're going in different directions with Nate all the time. But, like, when you were done that, what were you thinking? What was your takeaway?
Yeah, like you said, there's a ton of different things I could say here. But I think, like, one big takeaway for me is that, you know, a lot of people seem to think that he's just been waiting to fight Conor again, which – I will say, you know, if the Conor fight all of a sudden came together, I don't think Nate would, you know, turn it down. But it's not that he's been waiting for Conor. It's that he felt like he was a guy who fought for a long time in the UFC. He beat a lot of tough guys. I mean, he thinks of himself, you can hear it, you know, in some of the words that he uses and how he kind of references his age, that he came in as like a young kid, you know, and he was fighting who he thought were the best guys at the time. You know, he came off the Ultimate Fighter and he was thrown right in the machine of it. And he spent a lot of time doing that, you know, and he paid his dues. And then, you know, in 2016, he saw this guy, Conor McGregor, just catapulting to the top and making tons of money and becoming famous. And he's like, wait a second, I've been here longer than this guy. And so that was one of the great storylines about their rivalry. You know, that whole thing was built on Nate telling Conor that you're taking everything I worked for. And the biggest takeaway for me now is that Nate kind of still feels like that's still going on, you know, that he ended up getting what he wanted. He got what the sport owed him. He had those two big fights with McGregor. He was half of the reason why those fights were so big, you know, and then the UFC shuttled McGregor away and had him fight for a championship, which then turned into a boxing match with Floyd Mayweather. And in the meantime, a lot of the stuff that they were offering him was kind of right back to, you know, run-of-the-mill stuff in his mind. You know, I mean, I looking at it from my perspective, I mean, I think they offered Nate some fights that, you know, I thought made sense. But with Nate, it was like there was never a plan in place with him. You know, they had a plan for Conor. They had a plan for the guy who came in late and the guy who got choked out at UFC 196. Where is my plan? You know, and whether or not you agree with that, like, it does make sense to me why Nate feels that way.
And, you know, I love the Diaz line of thinking. Like, belts don't matter to me, I don't care. Like, a lot of guys are just big, like someone like Stipe is just like, I just want to fight for the belt, I just want to be the champion, and there's nothing wrong with that. Most people feel that way, but the way his mind works and his reasoning for why he should fight someone next is fascinating always. And so, like, I don't expect him, even though it would be a long shot for him to even enter the conversation at 170 for the title, I don't even expect him to care about Kamaru Usman at this point, as he alluded to when you spoke to him, said the same thing when I spoke to him like 2 months ago. This man just wants fights that are of interest to him. I don't want to say the word excite him because he gets very mad when you bring up the word excite. His brother got even more mad back in the day. But I really think that, like, if he wins, I really think that there's something there with Masvidal. I'm starting to get the feeling that Masvidal, unless they break the bank for him to fight Leon Edwards, and I don't know if they will, I'm really starting to get the feeling that he is not going to entertain that fight, and he'll probably just entertain a Nate fight or wait until Usman and Colby fight and then fight the winner of that one. But I'm getting the impression as well that we might, if we do see a Nate Diaz victory on Saturday, we might get a classic post-fight Masvidal call-out. Do you feel that way as well?
Yeah, it really hinges on what Nate says. You know, I'm sure that Masvidal will be watching very, very closely on Saturday, because he knows that Nate has dropped his name. I'm sure of that. And if Nate goes out there and with everybody watching, you know, I mean, this will be one of the most watched pay-per-views of the year, I believe. With everybody watching and it has the sports attention, if Nate does something and then he does mention Masvidal, if he has something to say about him, then that immediately turns into it's a title fight in and of itself. I mean, that's as big as any title fight really that we've seen this year. If Nate goes out there and calls out Masvidal after what Masvidal just did to Ben Askren, so yeah, I'm expecting that, and I got to believe that George is a little bit as well.
Which fight? If you're being 100% honest, I know you're kind of picking, you know, like you can't really go wrong here, but which fight are you more looking forward to? Co-main, Nate Pettis, or DC Miocic 2?
Co-main, and it's not particularly close.
Oh, wow. Really?
I feel bad saying that, because it's not like, I mean, DC and Stipe is a tremendous fight, tremendous. I mean, I even mentioned, I know that you, you know, you had posted something online about him talking about John Jones, and it just it struck me that, like, man, why are we talking about John Jones? I get it. I get why that storyline never goes away, and I am even guilty of it. You know, if I see DC and I interview him this week, there's a decent chance that John Jones will come up. But there's another part of me that was like, it doesn't feel like anybody's talking about Stipe right now. You know, I mean, if you go and look at the headlines, it's John Jones and Daniel Cormier stuff. You know, where is Stipe? This is a really, really important fight for both guys, particularly for Stipe. I mean, he is the only guy who defended that title three times. However, if he loses to DC twice, I mean, he can't write down on his resume, I was the greatest heavyweight of my era. He can't, even though he holds the record. You know, he can't do it anymore because he lost to the same guy twice. So it's a huge, huge fight for Stipe. Big time fight, obviously, for DC, whether or not he walks away. So I love that fight. But, I mean, I'm all about the co-main event. It's not particularly close. I'm definitely looking forward to the co-main more.
So in response to that, I do think it's important to note that, like, I'm asking DC. I saw some people saying, like, he's looking past Stipe. He's not coming out and talking about John Jones, right? So I have no doubt that DC is very focused on Stipe. He knows how good he is. He knows how the early portion of that first fight went. I really don't think he's looking past him. So I don't think we should fall into the trap of saying, like, look, he's talking about him and he's disrespecting Stipe. But I do feel in this particular case, and I understand what you're talking about, like how sometimes we look past the fight and look to the next one without ever really focusing or enjoying the one coming up. But in this case, his retirement is so closely linked to this particular fight, and the only fight that he would stick around for is Jones. So I do feel like, in a weird way, he does play a part in this, because DC isn't sticking around to fight Ngannou. Even if he loses this fight, they might try to coerce him to fight John Jones. And so I agree with what you're saying wholeheartedly. I know that we do this all the time in the media, but in this particular case, I do feel like Jones is actually a big part of the story.
I do believe he's a big part of the story, but he's too, for me personally, he's too much. And just to make it clear, I don't think that DC is not focused on Stipe. I mean, I was in San Jose not to do something with DC specifically. I was there more to talk to Habib, but I was around him. I saw him. I watched him work out. You know, we had a conversation on the side and everything. I believe that his focus is where it needs to be. I'm talking more about everyone else's focus. It just seems like, you know, John Jones and DC are going back and forth now on social media again. And, like, this is, it's pretty typical. I mean, this is not the first time it's happened. But I guess I'm just, I always expect John Jones to be part of the storyline with DC. But it feels like it's like, and I don't know, maybe it's just what I've seen on social media or what I'm hearing in the comments or people who are talking about this weekend's fight. But people are like more obsessed with this John Jones angle than they are with the really great angle that's right here, you know, for 3 days away, which is with Stipe.
Isn't that an indictment on Stipe? Like, he doesn't go out of his way to promote himself, to sell himself, to do a lot of media. And even when he does, it sort of feels like he'd rather be anywhere else in the world. Is that maybe why? Because we are drawn to the drama and the friction, and in this particular case, he doesn't give us a lot to work with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely Stipe's fault.
Okay.
But, I mean, I would counter that with, I don't think he cares. You know, I just don't think that bothers him at all. I mean, I think there are some guys that are bothered by that maybe, like, feel like I don't get the respect I deserve. Well, Stipe did have a problem with not getting the respect he deserved just in terms of his contract, you know, for a long time. But as far as, like, getting attention or being part of you know, the drama of Fight Week, it doesn't bother him at all.
True or false, this is Daniel Cormier's last fight?
I mean, my immediate reaction is true. But then, I don't know if DC will ever retire. You know, that's how I feel about it, right? Like, I think this has to be it. I think a lot of people around him want this to be it. I think deep down, part of him knows that it doesn't make sense to keep going. There's no reason to do it. I mean, you're going to make plenty of money. He doesn't need to fight John Jones again for his legacy. This entire idea of going down to 205 sounds miserable. Everyone is against it except for him. I would put money on this being his last fight. But then, I mean, this guy is just such a competitor, and it's hard for those guys to walk away. I mean, we have a whole history in combat sports of those type of individuals having a very difficult time to walk away. So I may lose that bet, but I would put money on him walking away. How about you?
It really is tough. I don't think he'll be able to live with himself. I know he says he's at peace. I know that he says that, you know, he is past it and he calls the shots now, but he is such a competitor. The fact that he keeps saying that the only way he'll fight him is if the fight happens at 205 just speaks to his competitive nature. And the fact that they booked Corey Anderson against Johnny Walker, and of course they booked Dominic Reyes against Chris Weidman, and I'm guessing, you know, the winner of that fight could conceivably turn around and fight 2 months later, leads me to believe that they're holding out hope that Jones's next fight will be against DC. Now, I don't think DC, if he wins, even if he loses, is turning around in 4 months to fight John Jones in December. But unless they're leaning towards Jan Błachowicz, which I don't know, I can't see, but crazier things have happened. I feel like they're holding out hope that he's actually going to do it, that they're going to convince him. And don't you think it's interesting that anytime, like, Dana's been asked about guys retiring, and when he's asked about it, or when someone talks about retiring and he's asked about it, he's like, hey, whenever you start talking about retirement, it's time to go. But with DC, who has talked about retirement, he's like, oh no, he's sticking around. We're going to get him to fight John Jones. Like, he completely ignores it. Isn't that interesting?
Hey, you know, Dana's been known to change his opinion to based on what he feels is best for the company at the time, you know? So that shouldn't shock you. But yes, it's a good observation.
All right. Well, I'll see you out there starting tomorrow. I'm out there tomorrow. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be phenomenal. UFC 241 in such a great venue, by the way. Anaheim has hosted some of the best events in UFC history, even the Affliction shows back in the day. The crowds are always great. It's sold out very quickly. It's going to be a fun time in Southern California. I'm looking forward to getting out there. Thanks for doing this, my man.
Yeah, man. We'll see you soon.
All right. There he is, Brett Okamoto of ESPN, joining us from Anaheim. In a matter of moments, we're going to be joined by Mark Raimondi of ESPN. Talk about some breaking news. But before we get to Mr. Mark, let me tell you about my good friends over at Lightstream. I love these people. They support us. They've been very loyal to us. They've been very good to us. And thus, I hope you will support them. Even if you go to the website, even if you go check in with them, it's good. Trust me. Use the code. Before I get to the code, let me tell you about credit card bills. Every single month you get them. Aren't they annoying? Multiple payments, multiple due dates. Wouldn't it be easier to have just one payment at a lower rate? You can with credit card consolidation from our good friends over at Lightstream. Get a rate as low as 5.95% APR with autopays. The plan is lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. Plus, the rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the life of the loan. The online application is so easy, you can apply right from your phone. That's right, right from your phone. And just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get the discount is to go to lightstream.com/Ariel. 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 Subject to credit approval. Rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply. And offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Ariel. For more info, please support them because they support us. We love them very much. They are good people. And I'm always happy when someone is supporting our show. So, some breaking news just came out as we were taping the segment with Brett Okamoto. Kat Zingano has been released from the UFC. Somewhat surprising. 7 fights in the UFC. She fought at UFC 184, of course, against Ronda Rousey. And Mark is all over the story. I have some insight into the story as well. But first, let's say hello to Mark Raimondi, who is joining us on the phone. Mark, are you there?
I'm here, Ariel. Are you there?
Yes, I am here. Yes. Why, do you not hear me?
I was kind of in and out for a second, but I think you're back now.
Okay. Well, we're in a new room today. You know, sometimes we don't get a lot of respect around these parts. You know, there's a lot of big wigs here. There's a lot of important people.
I see.
And so if I could only paint the picture, I'm not going to, but if I could only paint the picture of what we're dealing with right here.
A man of your stature.
Yeah.
How could they not be giving you your due respect?
Well, I'm happy you said it, Mark. I'm happy you said it. I want to talk to you about Stipe and the time you spent with him. But first, let's talk about some breaking news. Kat Zingano released. What do you know?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much just that. Kat Zingano released by the UFC, confirmed that with the UFC just a few minutes ago, did reach out to Kat Zingano for some kind of an explanation, you know, some kind of comment, statement, because it's pretty out of the blue. The last time we saw Kat Zingano was UFC 232. She fought Megan Anderson, and of course we remember that. That was that weird finish where Megan Anderson threw a kick at the toenail of her big toe on the kick grazed Kat Zingano's eye, and Zingano could not continue on with the fight. It was ruled a TKO, and it was a loss, but it was one of those weird fluky things that an eye scratch on a kick is so rare. So it's very surprising, Ariel, that coming off that loss, she's no longer with the UFC.
Well, I reached out while I was taping the segment with Brett. I reached out to a source very close to Kat, and what I was told was she has been filming and working on several big outside projects, and it didn't line up with the fights they wanted. And so my response was, and so that's it? And the response I got back was, yes. And that seems a little surprising. Feels like there's a little more to it. I know sometimes the UFC gets frustrated when someone isn't willing to jump in and take the fights that they want. But Kat Zingano, I feel like, is still a bit of a player, no?
Absolutely, 100%, especially if you're going to have a 145-pound division, because she has expressed interest in fighting, and she did, and she fought Megan Anderson at that weight class in December. So it is a little bit strange. It comes as a pretty big surprise, because Kat Zingano is, she has a win over Amanda Nunes. You know, she's beaten the 145 and 135-pound champion. I believe that was her last loss, Nunes. And Kat Zingano is popular. You know, she's a name that people know. She was really one of the first women that the UFC built up into a challenger for Ronda Rousey. We know how that fight went, but she's a name people know. People like her, it's definitely a surprise.
Yeah, and now I can't help but wonder. You got Cyborg available. You got Kat Zingano available. If I'm Bellator or the PFL, I'm trying to sign both of those. You got a nice little thing going on 145, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're PFL, you know, you can bring Cyborg and Zingano in, possibly have them fight someone, maybe not each other, this year in showcase fights, and then you could do a 145-pound season next year with them too, with Sarah Kaufman, with possibly Kayla Harrison, if she can make 145 pounds, and I know that she said that in the past that it could be a possibility. And then all of a sudden, that's a star-studded, 145-pound division that PFL has. On the other hand, I mean, Bellator could do very similar. They could sign both of them for 145 pounds. They already have Julia Budd, you know, who would be a matchup for both of them. They already have, I mean, they have a better 145-pound division than the UFC has. I mean, that's not really saying a whole lot. The bar is pretty low, but there are some possibilities out there for Katsingano.
Wow. Okay. So breaking news on this Wednesday while we're taping the show, Katsingano released from the UFC. Her run in the UFC has come to an end. She's been involved in some very big moments. Her first fight against Miesha Tate. We remember when she was walking out to the cage crying. I believe she was the first mom to fight in the UFC. Of course, she got the title shot against Ronda. Didn't go her way. Ended rather quickly in Los Angeles, UFC 184, the win over Amanda Nunes. She's had some great moments. Also has been through a lot personally. And now she's no longer in the UFC. So that will be very interesting to follow. More on that as the days go on. But for now, let's focus our attention back on UFC 241. Just posted this morning, Wednesday morning. Great story done by you. You spent time with Stipe Miocic at his firehouse just outside of Cleveland. And so I'm going to ask you a very open-ended question. And I kind of hate asking a lazy question like this. But like, what was that experience like? Tell us about it.
It was really a fascinating experience because it was just being with him on a regular day in his life, because that really is a regular day in his life. He does 3 days a week. He is at the fire station and he's doing either a 12-hour shift or a 24-hour shift. I was lucky enough, I guess you could say lucky is the word, to kind of coordinate with him so I could hang with him for a full 24 hours, which was really actually more like 26 hours. So he was probably very sick of me at the end of that shift. I went there at 7 a.m. on Sunday morning. This was about 3 weeks ago, and I left him at about 9 a.m. Monday morning. So I spent the entire day and night with Stipe Miocic, and it was just really the most interesting thing. Ariel is just, I mean, he's just so unlike a lot of other fighters, especially fighters who have accomplished and made as much money as he has. He's just a firefighter. When he's in that house, that's really all he is. And I really think in his regular life, that's really all he is. He's just a regular guy. You know, he likes to joke around with the guys at the house, and they don't give a crap that he is a UFC fighter, that he's a former UFC heavyweight champion. In fact, when he won the belt from Fabricio Werdum, they actually had him, his next shift, they had him clean the bathroom, clean the toilets and the showers with the belt around his waist. They do not care. They do not care, Ariel, that he is a man of that stature in the UFC.
I love that. Didn't they also, I read this in your story, but didn't they put a Junior Dos Santos toy in his locker after he lost to him? After he lost him, not beat him, lost to him.
That's correct. When Miocic lost to JDS a few years back. Of course, he has since avenged that loss. There was an action figure of Junior Dos Santos waiting for him in his locker when he got back to the firehouse. I mean, you and I know, Ariel, that fighters can be very sensitive about wins and losses, and for a good reason. This is something they work so hard for. You know, they train for months and months for that one fight, you know, that one opportunity, and it's very difficult to deal with when they lose. And, you know, Miocic loses, he goes back to Valley View Fire Department or Oakwood Fire Department, and those guys just crap on him if he loses. I mean, he told me that the fire chief at Oakwood, when he lost to Daniel Cormier last year, he came in, you know, his next shift, and the fire chief was just all over him. How could you lose to that guy? Are you kidding me? What the hell are you doing?
Another thing that I loved about the piece was the guys saying that Daniel Cormier is no longer allowed at that firehouse, because he did, great call on your part. I even asked DC about it on Monday. He did spend time with Stipe. He went out there for the In the Clinch show, the very short-lived In the Clinch show, because the deal is no longer with FS1, but they seemed like buddies. They were hanging out in Cleveland, all that stuff. And now they hate him. Like, not many people hate Daniel Cormier, and it seems like those guys hate him.
Oh, they loathe him. They really, really hate him, man. I wrote in the piece that like saying Daniel Cormier's name is like saying like a dirty word in that firehouse. It's 100% true. It's 100% true. What they really don't like is that he came into their place. I mean, this is really you know, this is where they work, but it's also, you know, where they live. You know, they spend long hours in that fire station as they wait for calls. You know, they sleep there. They spend 24-hour, 48-hour shifts. The full-time firefighters work 48-hour shifts sometimes. So this is really their home, and it's also where they work, and it's also just there's a certain it's like a sanctuary, you know, for them. So Daniel Cormier went in there very early last year before Miocic was going to fight Francis Ngannou, and he did an interview with him. He spent time with the guys at the firehouse, and you know, they developed a rapport. And then since then, it was one thing for Cormier to fight Stipe last year, but some of the things that he has said since then have really rubbed those guys the wrong way, and he is persona non grata at Valley View Fire Department.
Yeah, he kind of doubled down on the entitled comment from earlier this year, calling him a brat on Monday. So I think these are words that Stipe doesn't like to hear very much. I was just talking to Brett about him.
Well,
it's hard
to hear that you're a brat when literally during his training camp he's running into, you know, homes that are on fire, and you know, he's tending to overdose victims, and you know, he's seeing some horrendous things. So it's hard to call someone like that. I love Daniel Cormier, but it's hard to call someone like that a brat.
Right. By the way, does he ever take a break? Like before the, is he going all the way up? Is he working there all the way up until he flies out to Anaheim, or does he stop at some point?
So when I visited with him, that was his final shift. His final shift at the firehouse before the fight. It was about 3 weeks ago. He would have had another shift about 2 weeks ago, but it was his daughter Mila's, of course, first birthday. As you remember, Stipe's wife Ryan gave birth to her just in the days following, or the weeks following the fight last year with Dan Cormier. So it was her first birthday. They had a party for Mila, so he had to switch shifts with another firefighter. Otherwise, he would have been working, you know, about 10, 12 days up to the fight. And he left to start doing press like a week before the fight. So yeah, pretty much right up until the fight, he's doing these shifts at the firehouse.
And upon returning from a fight, like, does he take time off, or is he one of those guys who's back on Monday?
He's back pretty quickly. I don't know if he's back on Monday, but he's back in there pretty quickly. Also, an important thing here, he's trying to go full time. He's been a part-time firefighter for, and paramedic, I might add. A lot of people don't realize that when you work at a small fire station like this, you're a firefighter and also you're a paramedic. So it isn't like Stipe is just going out on calls, you know, if a fire happens, or if there's like a, you know, the proverbial, you know, cat in a tree. Like if someone falls, if an elderly person falls and hits their head, or, you know, someone needs an ambulance, Stipe is showing up, you know, to your house or to your place of work, to resuscitate you, or to take you into the ambulance or an IV and what have you. So it isn't just fighting fires. He's a legitimate paramedic as well.
That's unbelievable. How many hours a week do you, like, on average, do you think he's there as a part-timer?
He works three shifts a week, and that can vary between 12 hours and 24 hours. So you figure, I mean, he's working pretty close to 48 hours a week at the firehouse.
And do you feel like this is a hindrance to his career? Like, do you think it's a distraction? Do you feel like when he's doing a 24-hour shift, he's not getting good sleep, he's tired, he's groggy? Or do you think that it actually helps him? Because I saw that line where he says it, you know, it kind of takes his mind off of MMA. And, you know, we all need breaks from what we're doing in our daily lives. Like, do you feel like it's good or bad from your perspective, based on what you saw, based on the environment?
I really don't think it hinders him. I mean, the proof is kind of in the pudding in that way, Ariel. I mean, we've seen what he's been able to accomplish. This is nothing new. He's been doing this for 10 years. You know, he's been a firefighter for just as long as he's been an MMA fighter. So I don't think it hinders him at all. I think it is a way for him to take his mind off of it. It grounds him, as he said. I mean, he's certainly not one of these pampered athletes. I mean, those guys, you know, really rag on him, and he's just really one of the guys when he is there. As far as, like, he still trains 5 or 6 days a week when he's in training camp. Sometimes those are twice a day. I mean, when I left him, Ariel, that day at the firehouse, he was going right to training. So he spent 26 hours in the firehouse, did not get much sleep, and he had to go to training. And the thing about, I mean, he told me that he's really not a big sleeper in general, even when he's home. He never really has been. He's really not great at sleeping. But when you're at the firehouse, I mean, they do have like bunks and everything, but you need to be on call all night. If a call comes in, you need to jump up from your bed, put on your stuff, jump in the ambulance or jump in the fire truck and head out there. So it can't be a good sleep, right? I mean, if you're constantly wondering like, oh man, are we gonna get a call at 2 a.m? You gotta pop up. So he really didn't sleep that much when I was there. Actually, I went to bed for a few hours before he did when we were at the firehouse.
Did you sleep in the same room as him?
So it's like cubbies almost. It was like little rooms. Almost like cubicles, like very small rooms all in one like area, like a dorm.
And true or false, he made the bed for you?
Yeah, I know what it says in the article, but to break down the fourth wall a little bit, only on the MMA reporters, Ariel.
Thank you. Thank you.
That photo in the story of him making the bed was actually making it for me. That was actually my bed. That was actually my bed for the night. And because he was already there, so he already has like his area, he already has his bed. He was there just a few days earlier, so he already had like his stuff all set up. So he was actually making like a new bed for me with the sheets and the pillow and everything.
That's amazing. And like
one of the baddest men on the planet. I mean, it's saying he's a regular guy. I mean, he really is just a regular dude, a regular bro.
I'm just wondering that moment where it's like, all right, it's getting late and it's time for bed. Are you like, all right, well, good night, I'll see you in the morning? Like, what was that goodbye like?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of like, you know, he was still up. You know, he's milling about the firehouse. He's he's watching movies. He's hanging with the guys. I mean, a lot of the guys are still up. You know, some of them aren't great sleepers. And then it was just like, I don't think I'm. I mean, if the call came in, I would have gone out with them. But at that point, it was like 1 a.m. I was like, what am I? I mean, this guy could probably want some privacy too, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I had already been with him since, 7 a.m. So I mean, how many hours is that? It's a lot. It's like 18 hours. I'm not very good at math, Ariel, but it was a long time.
Were you disappointed?
So, yeah. So I was like, yeah, I mean, I don't think anything else is going on. I've already asked you a million questions. So I'm gonna call it a night, and I was up by 5 a.m. And he was already up. So
wow, were you disappointed that there were no calls?
I mean, in a way, yes. But I mean, there's different ways to think about it. Like, I mean, yeah, I mean, for the story, it would have been great if there was some kind of call that wasn't serious. You know, no one got really badly hurt or anything, and it was something simple, just so I could see him kind of in action. But you can't, as a journalist, you can't really sway the direction the story goes in. You just have to kind of be there and let the story come to you instead of, hoping that something happens. So it was fine the way it is. And, just seeing him in that element was unique enough. And it's a story that I've wanted to do for a very long time, because I'm just so fascinated by the fact that, here's this guy. He's the former UFC heavyweight champion. He is the most decorated UFC champion as far as title defenses goes. He's still one of the best men on the planet, and he goes to the firehouse multiple times a week, and he saves lives, and he's going on these paramedic calls, and he's just hanging with the guys at the house. I've always been fascinated by that. Like, what kind of a person does that? How many other fighters at his level are not just at working other jobs, but working jobs in like civil service? It's pretty crazy.
And so the big question is, we were just talking to Brett about this, he doesn't do a lot of media, it doesn't seem like he cares to sell himself, put himself out there. Do you now feel like you have a different appreciation, a different perspective on who Stipe is because you spent this time with him in that firehouse?
Oh, yeah, 100%. 100%. He just is not, I mean, he doesn't, I mean, when people ask him, when he meets people who don't know him, when he meets them in public, they ask him what his occupation is. What do you do for a living? He says, oh, I'm a firefighter. He doesn't say he's a UFC fighter. He identifies more with the blue collar, with the firefighter, with the paramedic, than he does with fighting. This is the kind of guy, Ariel, that he brags about his 4.97 Uber rating. You know what that is, right?
Yes, of course, yes.
So he brags that he has a 4.97 Uber rating, and he actually knows the call. He actually knows the trip that he went on in an Uber that got him less than a 5 rating. He knows exactly what it is, and he tells a story about it, and it wasn't his fault. It was actually his friend who was in the car who was a jerk to the driver, and that's why he believes that he doesn't have a full 5.0. And he's proud about this, and he's proud that he tips, you know, 25%+, you know, to bartenders and to servers, and he's just a different kind of dude than a lot of professional athletes at his level.
Wow, unbelievable! It's a great story. I hope that everyone goes out and reads it. It's on ESPN.com/MMA right now. Great access, great insight into who Stipe is, a guy who doesn't allow us to see who he is, often doesn't want to go out of his way to open, you know, DC's the complete opposite. He couldn't be more gracious and accessible. And I'm not saying that Stipe is a bad guy. He's just a different kind of person. And so, that was a great read and great insight into who he is. Great stuff, man. I'll see you out there in Anaheim. Appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
All right. There he is, Mark Raimondi of ESPN. Do yourself a favor and check that out. Mark's been doing some great features as of late. Had a great one on Liz Carmouche's water training last week. This one on Stipe and the Cain Velasquez wrestling one a couple weeks ago. So he has been killing it. Morundi killing it, as always, on ESPN. And I know Morundi's a big wrestling fan. And I know all of you are big wrestling fans, even though you don't like to talk about it. Out in the open, closet fans, if you will. Well, if you're a wrestling fan, you haven't heard of Cheap Heat, do yourself a favor and check it out. It's the best wrestling podcast out there, certainly here at ESPN. This week they've got SummerSlam results. The Boss is back. And my good pal Peter Rosenberg performs more of his Bar Mitzvah Torah portion. Yes, that's right. His Bar Mitzvah Torah portion. Isn't that amazing? I'm actually interested in hearing that. All this week on a very big Cheap Heat. Coming up, just go to where you get your podcast and type in Cheap Heat and you'll get it. I'm trying to call our next guest, and I guess he says that his phone went to a busy signal because they thought it was a spam call. What the hell? That is weird. It's been a weird day here. And so without further ado, let us say hello to @IAmTheBay, a.k.a. Mr. Brian Vega, who is joining us right now from Anaheim, of course, site of UFC 241. What's going on with your phone there, Brian? What do you got? You block phone calls? You're so busy that people can't call you?
No. Actually, my service provider blocks the scam likely calls.
Jeez.
So I think that's what's going on.
Are you saying that ESPN are scammers?
It probably didn't recognize the number.
Yeah.
So it said it was a scam likely call, and it automatically just rejects those calls on my phone.
Wow, that is great protection you have. But I'm happy that we have you, my man. You do great work. I was just building you up before you came on. Your Instagram page and the access and the quality of the work that you have is just amazing. I thought it would be fun to get your perspective on DC and everything going on at AKA. So first, let me ask you, you work as Daniel Cormier's personal photographer. When did you start working with him?
Correct. I started a little bit before UFC 200, like right when he was in camp for UFC 200, I came aboard.
And how did that come about?
It's actually a weird long story. So DC's barber and I went to high school together, and I ran into him one time at the barbershop, and he introduced me to Daniel. He said, "Hey, this is my buddy Brian. He's a great photographer. You know, maybe you guys should link up and work together." So Daniel was getting his haircut by my buddy. His name is Primo. And he kind of did one of those, yeah, you know, kind of brushed me off at first. Long story short, you know, I got his phone number and I was contacting him for a little bit, like, hey, you know, let's do some work. Do you mind if I go to the gym? And he just kind of like ignored me for a minute. And then I ran into him at a local MMA show in Concord. And I introduced myself one more time, you know, just in case he had forgotten who I was. And I asked him if I could take a photo of him. He said, yeah, no problem. And then I asked him actually if he could step outside because, you know, the sun was setting down. Concord area is beautiful. You know, there's a little waterfront, so the sun was coming down. It was perfect. At first, he looked at me a little weird, like, you know, just this guy he'd met 2 times. He wanted me to step out with him to take a photo. Uh-huh. He did it. I showed him the back of the camera. He loved the photo. And from there on, he's like, hey, you mind if I take one with my wife? Yeah, no problem. So his wife came in. Fiance at the time. She came into the photo, showed her. They loved it. And from there, it just clicked, and we started working together.
Wow. And was that your first entrance into the world of MMA, or had you been working with other fighters?
Professional fighters, yes. Actually, that was. He was my first professional fighter. Beforehand, I was doing like little MMA shows and, you know, amateur fighters, but nothing on that level.
What is it like working with DC? Like, obviously, I know Daniel quite well, but I know him from a different kind of perspective. Like, I'm not there every day. I'm not at his house. I'm not at the gym. I don't see the ups and downs of training camp. What is it like working with him?
He is the greatest. I mean, this guy just gives me free range to everything. There's nothing that's off limits. Anything that I need, he takes care of, and he treats me like, you know, family. Anybody that's in DC's camp, he treats like family, and that's, you know, something that not everybody gets to see. You know, he takes care of my kids as his. My kids know his kids. I know his wife personally. She knows my wife. So you're literally, I mean, this is a family, right? I know it's a business arrangement at the same time, but it's a family. And that's what I want people to know firsthand, you know, that DC takes care of his people.
And what's interesting about DC, like every fighter is a little bit different, right? But in DC's case, I get the sense that he loves being around a large group of people. Like, he likes when the whole team is together. He likes joking. He likes, you know, ragging on each other, and just like everyone has to go together, right? Like, he does media, everyone's going with him. Is that the case? Because it always seems like you guys are rolling like 10 deep every time.
Yes. Yes, definitely. We're always all together. And if you don't have thick skin, yeah, you're not going to make it. I'm just giving you a heads up right now. Especially like with characters like Rosendo,
right,
Camacho, and everyone that's in camp, you know, you have to have thick skin to be aboard. If not, you're going to, you know, cry yourself out of camp.
Right. And for those that don't recall, Rosendo Sanchez is DC's boxing coach, the one who pushed Brock Lesnar when Lesnar got into the cage last summer for, you know, that big showdown with DC that never came to fruition. So this, like, for this particular camp, how often are you seeing DC? Are you there every day at AKA?
Every day. So for this camp, I was lucky enough to be there every day. I missed maybe like 2 or 3 days, but besides that, we were always together. And that's everybody. You know, Rosendo, he makes a drive from Santa Rosa. He's out there, you know. His drive, his commute is 2.5 hours each way. He makes the commitment himself. You got Rudy Cruz. He's coming from Fresno. And it's not, you know, it's not the money aspect that we do it for. It's because we know what, we know the formula. We know what works. And these guys, you know, everyone just loves to be around one another. And that's why we do it, honestly.
And so, like, this particular week, you came out, I think, on Sunday. Did you fly out with him?
No, we actually, myself and Duran Nguyen, we drove. A couple of the guys drove themselves, too. It's not too far from where we're at. So, you know, last time there was a couple issues with cars, so we just decided to drive ourselves so we can have our own transport out here.
Okay, so, like, now that you're fully there, we're in the midst of fight week, he doesn't necessarily have to cut weight, but, like, what is your day-to-day like with Daniel? What are your obligations? What are your duties?
Anything that he needs, you know, that's, we're here for him. But, for example, Monday, my day started like at 5:30 in the morning. I got up, got my stuff together, met Daniel downstairs in his room at 6 a.m. We started doing media conference calls, took photos of that. And then from there, I mean, it was just media all day. We drove all around LA. We went over to the TMZ set. We went to Mario Lopez. We went to the ESPN office. And basically, I just document everything. And everything is pretty much up to, like, the minute. So the minute something's photographed, I immediately send it to him. If he likes it, he'll post it. If not, he won't. And that's the way I just keep everyone updated photos. As you know, in today's world, everything's social media related. So if you're not posting on social media and you're not getting that little buzz out, you know, you kind of fall off. But in DC's case, I mean, he's a double chomp. Everyone just wants more access or more in-depth look into what he's doing. And, you know, it has to be up to the second.
And do you have to clear everything with him?
See, that's the thing about DC. No, I don't.
Wow.
He gives me free range to do whatever I want as far as the photography goes. So I kind of know already his style and what he's going to like and what he's not going to like. So I just send him the things I know he's going to like, you know, as a quick push to social media, and then at the end of the night, I send them everything we shot. Everything's edited, ready to go. So if he wanted to post something in the morning, he's good to go.
Okay. And so And so you're giving him a collection and then he just picks whatever he wants. But as far as like what you post on your page, you're obviously not going to pick something that he doesn't want. Like maybe you're picking from the stuff that he chooses from.
No. So I can post whatever I want.
Oh,
I
just, wow.
I right. Yeah. He doesn't tell me, hey, don't post that, or hey, don't do this.
Damn.
So he gives me free range on my post, on my page to post whatever I want. And then I just, you know, for example, let's say we were on your show and I'm taking photos. The minute we leave your set, right, he has photos ready to post. And that's for me just editing on the fly. And then at the end of the night, I'll send him the whole take edited just in case he likes something else. Or, you know, the thing what we're trying to do for him too is archive everything.
Right.
He wants to keep everything for memories, you know, and that's honestly why I'm here for him. And like he told me the other day, he had some issues with some wedding photos that he had. And then he told me that the link was down. He was like, oh, man, what can I do? And I told him, hey, you know, the person who probably took your photos didn't pay their Dropbox subscription. And, you know, the guy dropped, he raced. He goes, please, whatever you do, do not, you know, stop paying your Dropbox. He goes, I'll give you money. You know, I'll take care of it. And I told him, you know what? I have backups on top of backups. So something does, you know, something does happen, there's always a copy of it.
And is this your full-time job?
No, believe it or not, it's not.
Okay.
We live in the Bay Area, so everything, you know how that is. It's expensive. It's busy. So you have to have multiple sources of income to you know, provide for family.
So are you like on vacation now, technically, even though you're still working?
Something like that.
Okay. You don't want to talk about the other job, clearly.
There's restrictions behind it.
I understand. Fair enough. So you're DC's personal photographer. You're with him wherever he goes. Are you anyone else's personal photographer at AKA?
So I started doing Luis Pena. I started doing Deron Wynn, Kyle Crutchmer. Those are the main guys I have right now that they, you know, gave me the full go-ahead to start doing their fight camp work. Kyle Crutchmer's in Bellator. Of course, you got Deron Wynn, who's in the UFC now. Luis Pena's in the UFC. And all the guys that are up and coming, I mean, I try to help them out with photos. So while they're training at AKA, I don't charge them. You know, I do it all because I want to be there with the guys and I want to see them expire. Sorry. And I don't charge them, you know, a dollar. Once they start making money, hey, we'll work something out where I just tell them, hey, cover my fees and, you know, some expenses and we're good.
That is incredible.
And then, later on down the line, when they start making, you know, a couple bucks and, you know, they can help me out, hey, more power to them.
When did you start doing photography?
You know what? I started in middle school. I was lucky to have a program in the middle school I attended, which was kind of like a little elective. But, you know, it's kind of like black and white pinhole type cameras. And then I did high school photography as well, but once again, it was black and white. I didn't really get into digital until about 2008. And at that point, digital was very, very expensive. And I didn't have the means to purchase a camera. So I was kind of borrowing one for a little bit.
And do you feel like at some point this can turn into a full-time job, or do you think you'll, like, it's just hard, especially with fighters? They don't make a lot of money. The up-and-comers certainly don't make a lot of money. Even some of the top stars don't make a lot of money. Is that the goal at some point, that you could do this full-time and not have to do anything else?
I wish it would need to be very lucrative. The only reason I'm still at my other job right now is because of the benefits. You know, I have a family. That's what comes first, the benefits. So if I were to find something where I can, you know, take care of the benefits myself, yeah, no problem. I'll take, you know, full time.
Okay. What's your do you have a favorite Daniel Cormier story, a memory, a moment, something that you got? I mean, he's had so many great moments since you just started working with him. Is there anything that sticks out? I know I'm putting you on the spot.
Just interactions.
Here.
It's weird, man. You know, I started a YouTube page, and I kind of document, you know, DC's behind-the-scenes stuff. DC and Khabib and some of the guys at AK. So there's just so much stuff. I mean, just, you know, it's all funny stuff, but the majority of, like, the personal interactions I have with him, everything's just memorable. He's such a good guy. I mean, he takes care of not only himself, or sorry, not only myself, but, you know, others around him. So I think the best one, I think, would have to be after he beat Stipe. I was in the back, And it was myself, Kane, and Rudy. We have to stay in the back. Kane doesn't, but myself and Rudy do. And he just comes, you know, with his belt, gives us this big hug, and, you know, kind of like, we finally did it. You know, I mean, what else comes after, you know, beating Stipe Miocic to become the heavyweight champion? There's nothing else. That's the top of the top. So I think that would have to be my best one.
Do you think this is his last fight?
We talk about it, you know, everyone in camp talks about it. He says it is, but the competitor in him, I don't know. I really don't. You know, he said if the UFC gives him $10 million, that he'll stay aboard.
Sure.
Now, will the UFC dish out the $10 million? No clue, but I mean, there is one more fight to make, I think. Whether the UFC wants to pay for it or not, you know, that's the ball's in their court and in DC's court.
My belief is that's the only fight. Like, there literally is just one fight. He would not entertain anything else but that Jones fight. Do you get the same impression?
Right, I get the same impression. There's nobody, I think. In my opinion, there's nobody else.
Yeah.
I know everybody was talking about Francis Ngannou. He's a good guy. You know, I have nothing against the guy. You know, I've met him several times. He's very cordial. His team's cordial. But, I mean, I don't think that's the right direction.
No, there's just one, like, I mean, at that point, you can stick around and fight everyone. There's always going to be a contender.
Exactly.
There's always going to be the next guy.
Exactly.
But
exactly,
this Jones
correct.
Thing is a different kind of thing. It's a different kind of beast. By the way, what's it like? I see your stuff, and I see the YouTube page is just youtube.com/IamTheBay, right?
YouTube.com/C/IamTheBay. For some reason, the creator, when you're a creator, they make you put a C in front of it. But yeah.
Okay.
Or you can just Google, YouTube IamTheBay, and they all come up.
Right.
And the majority of those videos are just DC and Khabib just messing around, fooling around full time, man.
That footage is amazing, but you see DC in there, you see Khabib, you see Kane in there, you see Deron Wendley, you see so many guys, and it's like, wow, I can't imagine. I've been to the new AK or the newish, it's not that new anymore. And, you know, it's big, but like that area isn't that big. You see all those guys together. That must be amazing, right? To just be there every day,
yes.
And to see the interaction, see the sparring, see the ribbing. I'd imagine there are times, like, you can't talk about everything, but I imagine there are times where you're like, man, this is a pretty damn cool job that I got here.
Definitely. And I just want to clear something up. Everyone always comments that, you know, the majority of my videos are them bickering, messing around, and not training. These guys train so hard, so much, that I'm only capturing moments, little segments, seconds of their downtime, right, in these videos. And people are always coming, oh, they're, you know, horsing around. I'm messing around. How do these guys expect to be champions if they're just messing around? But listen, DC does, you know, workouts 3 times a day, sometimes at 7 a.m. for a run. He goes to AK at noon, and then he either does a bike session in the afternoon or is hitting mitts with one of the coaches. This guy is nonstop. Same goes for Khabib. Guy is nonstop. I mean, that's just the AK work ethic. You know, these guys are nonstop, always going.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing that you have. It's, you know, there are not that many personal photographers out there in this game. There are a few here and there, but not, you know, truly not every fighter can afford it. So you have great access to one of the all-time great figures in the history of the sport. And I got to do that E60 piece on him, which was a great honor. But just to see how much he cared about that wrestling team, I wouldn't have experienced that if I wasn't there. We were there in late January. And to see how much he cared about those kids and the Gilroy High School wrestling team, I thought he did it for fun. You know, he doesn't get paid. It's something to do. He cares about that, like his own career. Like, he was stressing out over one kid making weight and whatnot. I'm sure you get to see that as well. That was my biggest takeaway of the whole experience, how much he cares about those kids. Like, this isn't a side gig for him. He treats it like a full-time job, right?
Yes. I mean, yeah, he's not doing it for the money. The money he gives to the coaches, he's not even on salary. He doesn't collect a salary, but he invests his time full time to Gilroy High School. And, you know, he brought me aboard, so I do some of the stuff for them as well. You know, just document some of the kids wrestling and taking photos for them. And we just give them to the family for free. There's no charge. But my thing is, he knows all the kids' families. First, last name, everyone he knows by name, and he is so dedicated to these kids. At first, you know, it was a little rough patch at first for myself because I couldn't go out there as much. But as I started going out there and getting to know the kids and their family, you know, you have something when these kids come up to me, hey, you see, I really appreciate what you do. You made my wrestling 100% better. And these kids telling DC, I love you and thank you, just the honor and respect they have for him, that does it. That solidifies why he's doing it. And just a quick story. He had a tournament in Gilroy where a bunch of other schools, were invited to come down, okay? There was this one kid, I'm not sure from what school he was, I totally forgot, but he was up on mat, and he couldn't wrestle, right? So DC says, hey, what's going on? What's wrong with this kid? Why can't he wrestle? It turns out that this kid was the only one that came from, and he drove and paid, or sorry, he paid for his own ticket, so it was just him. He came, his coaches ditched him, and he had no one to train with, and he was up on the mat next, and he had no one in his corner, so he couldn't wrestle. DC found out and told the kid, hey, you know what? I know you're not from our school, but you're more than welcome to come with us. We have several coaches here. Go ahead and pick a coach. We'll corner you for the rest of your stay here. If you need any training partners, if you need anything, just let us know. Reach out to us, and we'll take care of it for you. No questions asked. The kid was so thankful, and that's the type of character that DC is, that he'll help everybody out.
That's amazing. I love that. And I know that, he's fighting with a heavy heart because of what happened recently in Gilroy. I hope that no one that was affected by that.
Actually, a good friend of mine, that was the little boy who passed away. That was her nephew. So, yeah,
oh, my
yeah.
gosh.
It close.
I'm very sorry.
It hit home to everybody. And, we were there the day before. We were, at DC's house, just finished training. And we were thinking about going to the Garlic Festival, my family and myself, the following day. We had a family come in, and we were supposed to go. And my family, for some reason wanted to stay home and watch a movie. So they stayed and watched a movie. Me and my son were like, hey, let's do something. So we were going to go, and then in the car last minute, we're like, you know what? Let's just go to Great America. So we went over to Great America, which is a little theme park by where we live, got on a couple of rides. And then we started, getting these the alerts about the shooting. For some reason, we're like, these gang members or someone, shooting each other at the festival. We didn't think anything of it. And then when we got home, we found out, that it was a mass shooter and, a couple lives were taken. So, yeah, it's tragic. Very, very tragic and unfortunate that happened, so close to home.
Yeah. And I see the post on your Instagram about Steven Romero. May he rest in peace. It's a horrible thing. And I know DC and other fighters from the Hurricane dedicated his pro wrestling debut to what happened to the community. They're very proud of Gilroy. Got to experience Gilroy. It's a beautiful town, and I like that they're representing the town so well as they have these big moments in the spotlight. Again, the Instagram page is I Am The Bay. It's a great follow. You're doing great work, my man. I saw some.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, some of the photos that you've been posting. Daniel looks in great shape. I hope he keeps the beard for the fight. It sounds like he won't, but I like the beard on him. I think it makes him look cool, the little gray hair. But it's great insight into who he is. On Fight Week.
Thank you.
You're doing really great stuff. Thank you for doing this. Keep up the great work. Keep putting great stuff out there. Beautifully shot stuff. It's just amazing. And by the way, congratulations on, I saw you drop 50 pounds. So apparently being at the gym is helping you out as well. So congrats on that.
Yeah. You know what? Check this out. With the camp like this, how can you not, AKA too, they open their doors to everybody. You don't have to be professionals with AKA. You can be just, regular average Joe wanting to get a little work in. And in that sense, I got to thank Javier Mendez for just letting me train, no questions asked, just show up and do what you have to do. And, everyone should check it out. Even if it's not AK, just check out a gym, to drop some pounds. So myself and, Carlos, one of the other photographers there, Fruit Juice. Yeah. He dropped, I think he's like 55 pounds down now. Now I'm at 50. So yeah. It's a good thing.
Well done. Looking forward to seeing you out there, Brian. Thanks for doing this and all the best to you.
Yes, Ariel. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, there he is, Brian Vega, at I Am The Bay on Instagram. You can see his stuff on YouTube as well. Great insight into not only Daniel Cormier, but as he mentioned, guys like Violent Bob Ross, Luis Pena, Deron Wynn, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Islam Makhachev. There are some great photographers in this game. Obviously, Esther Lin does a phenomenal job. Back in the day, our good friend James Law. There's Ryan Loco for the PFL. But Brian does a great thing just, capturing all things DC and AKA. So I thought that would be fun perspective, and it was. And so I enjoyed that very much. UFC 241, my friends. It's actually happening. I'm looking forward to it. I'm off to Anaheim tomorrow. What a lineup. Hannah Cyphers, Jody Escobel. Brandon Davis looked very good in his 135-pound debut in April against Kyung Ho Kang. Shayna Dobson against Sabina Mazo, who's looking to rebound. How about the undefeated Manny Bermudez against Casey Kenny? Christos Giagos against Strakhar Close. Rafael Sunsao against Corey Sanhagen. Love that fight. Devontae Smith against Kama Worthy. That's the prelims. And then it's Derek Brunson against Ian Heinisch. Mowgli Benitez against Sadiq Youssef. Paulo Costa against Yoel Romero. Nate Diaz against Anthony Pettis. And of course the big one, Daniel Cormier against Stipe Miocic for the heavyweight title. Will this be DC's last fight? We shall find out. Main card on ESPN Plus. Prelims on ESPN beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern. Early prelims on ESPN Plus. And by the way, I'm back on the air on terrestrial radio Saturday night, 8 to 10 this time. We'll watch the prelims together, take your calls. It's going to be great. For now, though, we are out of time. Thank you very much, Brian Vega. Thank you very much, Mark Raimondi. Thank you very much, Brett Okamoto. Great stuff from all of them. Enjoy the fights this weekend. I'll see you all weekend long from Anaheim. But for now, we're out of time. Thank you for listening, rating, subscribing, downloading, all those things and more. Appreciate you as always. We're out of here.